Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stormkeep. My name is Paul. I have another battle report for you today, featuring Stormcast versus Caradhron Overlords. Caradhron are currently one of the best armies in the game, and I had an excellent game with a local store goer in my area who came onto the podcast to talk about the game with me. So say hello to everybody, Yuri.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast, and I look forward to having an interesting and productive chat.
Okay, so let's jump into talking about the battle that we played. We played on No Reward Without Risk. You know, when people first read this battle plan, they thought there was an errata missing. They thought, hey, where's the usual clause about this where you have to deploy a certain distance away from enemy territory? And we waited for the errata, and no errata came. So it turns out that the intended way to play this battle plan is that you can just deploy right into melee combat if you want to. And that's a very, very unique thing to this battle plan. Now in our store league, because it's meant to be, you know, more friendly towards new players as well as providing a challenge, there is a house rule in place that players must deploy more than 9 inches from enemy territory. Yeah. What do you think about that in particular, Yuri? The house rule?
Yeah. So, I agree. Initially when this battle plan was revealed, everybody, thought that, you know, it's going to be FAQ'd where you would have to deploy 9 inches from the center, and this never came. Technically in this battle plan, you can deploy within the combat. However, I've been seeing that different TOs have been treating this battle plan differently. So like you mentioned, our local gaming store is treating where you have to deploy 9 inches away. I've participated in the GT this past weekend where the TO ruled that you have to deploy 3 inches from each other, right? So it's 1.5 from the center, right? You cannot be deployed in the combat. You have to be at least 3 inches away from each other, right? So, yeah, there are different interpretations of that.
Yeah, this one seems to be getting the most house rules I've ever seen from a battle plan. Usually, if people don't like a battle plan, they just won't play it, right? They'll ignore it, and it won't get popular, and then most TOs will ignore it. People seem to really like this battle plan overall, and I think it's because it really feels like one of those Season 2 battle plans that we play with this corner deployment and the five objectives all in the middle. It's a very tight-knit, combat-oriented one. But the house ruling is pretty crazy how much it's getting house ruled. Now, I personally just want to play this one as it's written. I think it's a really cool hook to be able to deploy straight into melee combat. It makes units like Gotrek just phenomenal. Like he's so fun on this battle plan because he starts the game where he wants to be, you know, like middle of the board right away. I think it's really cool. It adds like an interesting element. That said, you know, I don't mind that there's this house rule. I think it's, you know, if TOs want to do that, then more power to you. You can run your events however you like.
Yeah, agreed.
So let's go over the criteria for winning here. It's the player with the most victory points at the end. Victory points are scored during your turn. For controlling one objective, you score a point. For controlling two objectives, you score a point. For controlling more objectives, you score a point. And for your battle tactic, you score 2 points. This is very standard these days in scoring on battle plans, you know, 1-2-more tactic. That's kind of what we say around here. What makes this one different in that way is that there are 5 objectives. A lot of other battle plans this season have an even number. This is actually one of the few that has an odd number. And I've kind of gotten used to having an even number where it's like, you know, you're either controlling 2 or 3, you know, and then, you know, your opponent's trying to take away one of yours. And having one with 5 actually means you're a lot less committed, because if you just control your 2 home objectives and then swing in towards the middle to get that, it's actually really easy to get ahead, which makes this battle plan very low commitment until you remember that you're supposed to deploy into melee range, right? So it kind of,
yeah.
But when you add this 9-inch restriction, it becomes a very low commitment battle plan. The other gimmick happening here is that whenever a wizard hero is slain on this battle plan, on a 4-up, they explode. And then each unit within range takes D3 mortal wounds, and the range is equal to the wound characteristic. So I've played a game on this where something like Krondis or Archaon dies, and everything within 25 inches takes D3 mortal wounds. It's so stupid when that happens, but oh boy, is it funny.
Yeah, and specifically in our game, we had enough D3 mortal wounds, so we didn't need to add another D3
Yeah, we had
D3 damage. So
enough.
yeah, sure.
The last odd thing about this battle plan is the corner territories. And there's not a lot of these this season. There was more of these last season. But this season, because of the way the battle tactics are set up, it's actually really hard to score tactics on this battle plan. Things like surround and destroy are really tough to do because you really only get the two edges near your territory. You have to have very fast units that can clear half the board in order to get there. So you need things like 12-inch move units that can auto run six in order to get it reliably. And it's also really easy to deploy out of unbinding range here. Because the territories are so far apart on the diagonal, you can deploy on an objective and potentially be out of unbinding range at the same time. So, pretty interesting battle plan overall. And we knew this was in the pack when we picked the list going into it. Now, you and I didn't know we were going to be facing each other at when we submitted our list for this event. So it was interesting. Did you factor this into your list building when you put your list in, this particular battle plan?
I did, yes. And specifically, I thought my competitive advantage would be getting the battle tactics, because KO has a pretty strong book battle tactics that you can achieve reliably. And specifically going against you, I thought I had an advantage there, but I don't want
Yeah, no spoilers.
to spoil anything. Yeah. But so yes, to answer your question, I did consider I had actually the plan laid out for the battle tactics for the turn one, turn two, turn three, turn four, and five, but we're gonna talk about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into your list here. You went with a Caradron Overlord's list. That's what you've been playing in the league for many weeks now. Break down this list for us, why you made the decisions you made, and if the local, like, we had to lock in lists for this round weeks ago, right? So what was your decision-making process? What sorts of things influenced it? And what do you think about Caradron overall right now?
My list is built around the Balloon Boys, specifically Endrin Riggers, the guy who repair the boats and they can hit pretty hard. So I've got unit of nine, unit of nine, and unit of three. They're a battle line because of the Endrin Master is in my list. I've got the Admiral with a Stormcaller. This is a command trait that allows me to reroll reading the winds ability on my navigator. And then I've got a Gun Hauler, and Gun Hauler is the little ship that flies around being annoying. I have three Balloon Boys sitting inside, and the purpose of that unit is essentially fly high, go behind enemy's line, maybe pick up small heroes that are holding the objectives, or lost somewhere on the board, and just being annoying, and obviously score the battle tactics, which yeah. So that's essentially my list.
Cool.
I love frigates, especially their ability to disembark units in combat, making them fight first, and then allowing to activate different units one by one. So yeah, was pretty successful with this list.
Well,
And
let me run
yeah.
some questions by you here, because we did a Caradron review for the channel a while back, and I really liked Endrin Riggers and Sky Wardens, and I liked Barak-Zon. This was like the one that I really liked because it gives you plus one hit and plus one wound the turn you charge, and it turns Caradron from like a shooting focused army into one that shoots and fights pretty well. And so I wanted to ask you a couple questions here. I noted that you went saws on every single model. You didn't go for the like the grapnel launchers or the special weapons. Is that just because you wanted the melee damage output?
I wanted the melee damage output, and the reason why I did that is because so essentially they have Ren 2 on their attacks, making their damage more reliable. And the idea is to charge and clean everything that you charge, like lift the unit. Because if you're stuck there, that essentially they're losing plus one to hit and wound, and they're pretty fragile. They're four up save, three up in the boats, and they're two wounds each, no ward save, right? So that's why I need a reliable damage with a run two. Another thing to note here is that I'm trying to keep points as low as possible. So I'm 90-60. I still think it's a little bit high to get the triumph. I want to, you know, the previous list I was running was 90-20, which gave me, you know, a more reliable shot for the triumph. And the reason why I really need the triumph is because in case I get stuck in combat and I don't have this buff from charging, if, let's say, on my activation, I can use a CP for all-out attack and then triumph, and then I'm again hitting and wounding on twos, right? Which would allow me to free up from the combat, and then if I win the priority next, I'm back in the game, right? Yeah. So that's the logic.
Cool. Yeah, I really like this list overall. You kind of built the whole thing with a very specific mindset, which was you know, don't engage, be as far away as possible, use the mobility of teleporting into a 3d6 charge, use the mobility of running and charging with two dice with a reroll, just get all this tons and tons of speed and mobility so that you can pick the fight you want when you want. And until then, you've got a little bit of shooting to, you know, clear screens, poke on objectives, kind of just feel the opponent out until you're ready for that big turn where you dedicate and you send it in. Because obviously, like you said, they have two wounds apiece on a four-up save. This is a very low wound list. It doesn't take damage very well in melee in particular. With the article you took, Honor is Everything, your whole army's got a four-up rally. So from magic and shooting, you're pretty durable because you're just going to take, you know, half the guys come back to life every single turn. But against melee combat, if you don't win that initial engagement very, like, just crushingly, then when you get hit back, it's all going to go very poorly. And the whole list is built to do that as well as possible, right? The gun hauler harassing, the two frigates picking the right moment to engage, all of it getting fight first, so you charge everything and it all fights for... It's a great list, man. It really is. How do you feel about Engine Riggers versus Sky Wardens? Because Sky Wardens do less shooting but more melee. How do you feel about that?
So first of all, like, that's a great question, and I've been trying both units. Why I prefer Engine Riggers is, you know, the boat repairs is just too good, especially when my grand strategy relies on that. Losing a boat cripples my army, not only from the grand strategy perspective, but from the game plan perspective and, you know, mobility perspective. So I need to keep my boats alive, and they repair on every turn, so my turn and my opponent's turn, right? So this is great. Two rent is great consistency. Yes, Sky Wardens, so first of all, Sky Wardens are more expensive, 10 points, but still. Their damage is more reliable because it's flat 2 versus D3. However, they have rent 1. And with a save stacking, rend one does not give you a reliable, you know, damage output. So all that consider, I prefer Engine Riggers.
Totally fair. Yeah, the healing especially is very, very good. There's a lot of armies that try to do damage in multiple phases. They'll, you know, try to hit you in the hero phase, then in the shooting phase, then fight you. And being able to just right before the fight phase just fully heal up the boat, because 3-up save and I think 15 wounds on a frigate, they're tough to kill. They're not easy. Yeah. So all that healing just is really actually very useful in this style in particular, because there's not that much that can reach out and touch your boats from the like that far away. You can stay at the table edge and just pick the right moment to engage, and any damage you take on the way in is healed up. So it's really good. Would you consider swapping maybe some of the Riggers for some Sky Wardens, just bringing in a bit more? Because their higher max damage is pretty useful when you're just dealing with things like zombies or Like Broad, that's going to be a popular list going forward as the Gargants are coming back in a big way. And it's just a matter of, you know, higher max damage. Is that something you'd consider?
Maybe. And the reason why I'm saying maybe is it all depends on the Triumph, right? I need to have the reliable access to the Inspired Triumph. So I try to keep my... It's more important at this point than just swapping a unit of Sky Wardens.
Okay, fair enough. Fair point.
That's, yeah.
All right, I just want to show people some shots of your army here because it is just awesome. We talk a lot about gameplay here, but I just wanted to showcase your awesome conversions and basing on these units, like your frigate here with a built on the back of an Leviathan. With all this elaborate basing and all these rust effects, and then you're up, like, this is a beautiful army. It was a joy to play against this. It was really, really fun.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So, fantastic work. Do you have, like, an Instagram account or anything where people can come see more of your models?
Twitter. We are Bulldog Hammer.
Okay.
So, we upload all our painting progress there, so.
All right, looking at my list, this is the same one that I use, a very similar one to the one I use against James in round one of the league. And if people are on our Discord server, you've read my battle report against Khorne using the same list. It got a little bit cheaper since the Khorne game because the points update happened, but the core of the list is still the same. It's a Comet Fall type list, which is trying to do a lot of mortal wounds from range in an area. The point of it's not fully committed to that idea. I know a lot of people these days are trying to run, you know, a lot of shield annihilators and Celestine Prime and just try to wipe your opponent out with one big turn. But I'm not a fan of that idea because if that one big turn doesn't end the game, you don't win. Like, you just have a very low chance of winning the game. So I like a more well-rounded approach. I like bringing three Night Vexillors. I like bringing the Comet. And then I like just bringing independently good units in a Stormcast army. So it's got the Knight Relictor for translocation. It's got the Encanter who's adding mortal wounds with Lightning Blast every turn. It's got some Vanguard Hunters who can teleport around and score battle tactics. It's got Tempesters, Dracolines, Fulminators, like all the Stormcast big hits. Long Strikes in there as well to Thunderbolt Volley. So this list I've been playing for a little while now, and I quite like it. I think if you can dodge matchups like Gargants where you're just lacking that last little bit of damage, you know, because Tempesters aren't the highest damage and neither are the Comets. If you can dodge some bad matchups, I think this is a pretty good Stormcast list. I did look, you know, when we were submitting lists for this round, I looked at who was going to go into the top eight, and I looked at all the lists. I'm like, oh, there's a lot of armies here that have, you know, 5 and 6 wound heroes, and all the battle plans are supporting this idea of just dropping meteors from 24 inches away. So I thought, hey, why not? Let's give it a try. And it seems like I got some reasonably good matchups for it.
Yeah. Especially against my list, you mentioned that we had to lock our list a few weeks in advance. However, before the game, we had the access to our opponent's list. And once I looked at your list, I thought that I could be in trouble only because KO is very susceptible to the AoE damage. And based on your list, it was mostly like an AoE first couple turns at least, right? So... that was a tough match going into initially, but I think looking at your list, it's very, very balanced, right? You don't have a character or a unit that, you know, once you take it out, your army falls apart. It's pretty resilient, right? So you don't have one target that you want to, you know, prioritize and take out. Everything poses potentially a threat, right?
Yeah, so and one of the interesting things about Stormcast is that as long as we have, like, two hammer units left alive, we're probably going to win the game because those two hammer units can do so much damage. And by the time you get to those, like, scrappy conditions at the end of a game, just being able to kill everything can secure a win. Yeah, no spoilers, but let's go through deployment. Let's talk about our thought process here. So for terrain rules, we did what it says in the core rules, you know, to the defender sets up the terrain and then the attacker picks the side. We opted not to use the mysterious terrain, And I ended up setting up the terrain like this. And then I managed to sneak a photo after we both put down our deployments here. So you were the attacker. You deployed your frigate first on the right side there. We're just going to talk about it from the perspective of these photos, make it easy for people watching. You put down your frigate with nothing in it, right? It was just the unit that was outside the battle regiment. And I responded by putting Vanguard Hunters far left side, still touching the objective barely, but also in cover. So, and then your battle regiment, you dropped it all. So run me through your thought process here. What were you thinking in particular with this first drop? But then we can talk about the rest of your deployment as well.
Yeah. So my thought process was to have my ships and my unit, as far away from each other, just to, prevent from the AoE damage from your Vaxilors and your Comet. However, the limitation of this battle plan did not allow me to fully avoid the potential threat. The reason why I put my first frigate so far behind is that potentially, you know, bait you from deploying closer to me, right? And had you essentially, you know, caught this bait, I would deploy as close to the center as I could with the rest of my army. And given that I had a priority call who goes first, I would probably try to alpha strike you, taking out your key pieces, especially the ones they deal the AoE damage, right? But you pretty smartly, you know, deployed far. And this didn't work.
Yeah, so let's go into the rest of your deployment here with the battle regiment. I've got some notes on the screen here, but if there's anything else you want to add, feel free.
Yeah, no, so essentially, I realized that you will be deploying further back, and then I will be giving you the first turn. At that point, I wanted to spread out as much as I could. Just like I said, to avoid the AoE damage from your abilities and endless spell. Now I realized that, you know, from the comet I wouldn't be able to avoid potential damage from my entire army, but at least from the Vaxilors I could save one ship from the D3. Damage. And that's how I deployed. I was hoping that, you know, I will take this damage, and then with my 4-up rally and ship repairs, by the end of my turns, I will be able to heal most of my units.
Mm-hmm. It was the right style of deployment, especially putting your navigator up on the front line meant that I was limited where I could cast spells from. I did predict that you would probably try to make me go first. Of course, it's never a guarantee, right? If I overcommit and I put everything too close, then all of a sudden you flip the switch and you alpha strike me, and then the game's over, right? So I had to have a defensive deployment, but I needed the option to be aggressive to do some damage. And putting that navigator up on the front line limited where I was able to cast spells from.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're bringing a good point. I put the navigator closer to you because I have the artifact that allows me to auto-unbind the spell. And I was hoping that, you know, I would unbind the comet when you would intend to cast it. But the comet, you can stay outside of 30, right? Because the comet has 36 inch.
Yes, the comet sets up wholly within 36, and then it hits units within 10. So it has a 46 inch threat range, which is just enormous. That's probably why it's 90 points.
Right.
Yeah, I like this deployment. You also didn't come too close to me with the navigator. Because the closer your gun hauler was, the further back I could be with units like long strikes, for example, which would come down and start shooting at that. So you made sure that if I was going to commit units, I'd be closer than, you know, the back edge. And as we discussed, this battle plan is very non-committal because it's very easy to score two and score more while staying at a safe distance. So I really like what you did with your deployment here. One thing I just thought of now is, could you have just disembarked some of your units and then embarked them on your turn? You know, was there any downside to putting your units outside the boat? That way they would just wouldn't get hit by any meteors because that I'd be too far away.
Like, I thought I pre-measured that. I didn't find a good spot to put my units outside. And I was honestly, I wasn't afraid you taking, dealing damage to the balloon boys, because I can easily bring them back through rally. I was more concerned about the long strikes to wiping off the entire unit. Because like I said, they're only four up safe. And it's only 18 wounds, right? So yeah, with your long strike shooting, with your, teleporting, translocating, you can put a couple of Vexillars into them and whatnot. And if I lose nine guys at the start of the game, that would be a very hard to come back, right? Yeah. So that's mm-hmm. That was the rationale there.
Well, this was a good deployment. It really, I thought about this matchup going into it quite a lot, thinking about how you deploy. This is more or less what I thought you'd do. Spread, keep one in the middle. The navigator in the middle, that surprised me. I wasn't expecting that, but it did end up playing to your favor. So kudos on the deployment. It's very well done. And just noting, you did tow in on one objective. Is there any particular reason you decided to be on just one objective? Obviously, you wanted to keep the other two guys away, but you could have decided to just be on no objectives. So is there any particular reason you chose to be on one?
You know what, to be honest, for this battle plan and for this deployment, it doesn't matter whether I'm on one objective or on zero objectives, right? So there was no particular reason and no downside, as well as no benefit of either being or not being on the objective.
Yeah, because if you can't get on two, it doesn't really do anything to stop me.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so it does force me to step on a second one, but I was going to do that anyway.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's take a look at my deployment here. I deployed such that I would be able to set up the meteor just on the other side of your gun hauler, and I found a spot that was within 10 inches of both frigates, and so that then the Vexillar was placed such that he could cast at that exact spot, while also being more than 30 inches out from your gun hauler. Because the angle of the base on the gunboat is the way it is, I was able to find a very, very small spot. But because of that, I was able to avoid your Voidstone orb and threaten casting a meteor on your first turn. Following from that, I kind of just set up the rest of my army to support that deployment. So I had some Liberators in front, another Knight Vexillor on the side, this time in ranged to drop a meteor on the boat there. Relictor with Encanter in the back, and then everything kind of in a close formation, making sure that if you tried to, for example, teleport and then 3d6 charge from a flank, there would be very limited options about what you could get into, based on terrain setup and what was available to hit. It's hard to know how useful of a deployment this was because you opted not to go first, but this is the thought process I was thinking. I also tried to make sure that all my heroes were within 3 inches of a unit so that you had to get within 12 inches in order to shoot me. And for example, with the Knight Vexillor in the middle there on the middle left objective, he was within three of the Liberator, but more than three from the front line. So if you teleported in range, he would not be within 12 inches to shoot because you have 12-inch guns. You have to be more than 9 inches away from me. So since I'm more than three off the front line, you would not be able to shoot me. So those are the deployments. I ended up leaving Tempesters and Long Strikes in reserve because I felt like Tempesters needed a bit more mobility, and I didn't know how much I wanted to commit on the first turn if forced to go first. If you took the first turn, I could drop them in as like a counter shooting thing. The Long Strikes obviously were just too risky to put on the table. I feel like no matter where I put them, you would find an angle to hit them, and they needed to get at least two volleys off. They needed to get Thunderbolt volley, and they needed to shoot. So they were just too risky to leave to chance. All right, let's talk round one. So you did indeed force me to go first, which was predictable. And it's, let's talk about that decision real quick. After the deployments, you had some serious thinking, and you thought you might take the first turn. What was your thought process there?
Yeah, so essentially going back to your deployment and to my previous point, I thought I would probably catch you off guard if I take the first turn, because I think when you prepared or, you know, were thinking about our match, you would think that most likely I'm going to give you the first turn. And I thought that, you know, with my deployment, you would also deploy more aggressively, thinking that you will take the first turn, so be, you know, closer to the center. And at that point, with my fly high ability and with my 2d6 running and charging, I would take the first turn. I would not only get my two frigates into you, I would get my little ship, the gunhauler, because gunhauler was very close, pretty close to you, and once per battle it can add additional 6 inches to its move characteristic. So this didn't happen. You deployed very conservatively in the back, protecting your key heroes and leaving me outside of the threat range for my both frigates. You protected your back of your flanks. There was no point where I could land with a fly high ability and potentially try to charge from behind. So there was really no reason for me taking the first turn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's,
yeah. Well, it sounds like my deployment did deter you then. So that's good to hear, because it's, you never hear feedback about that. Was my deployment good or not? Because, like, you never really know at the end of the day, but it's good to hear.
I think it was very smart. At least you didn't, fall on the trap. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it would be, would play out, but I thought I would have had a better shot had you deployed more aggressively towards the center.
Well, I was very worried that you were going to get a double turn, and with the amount of shooting that you have, you'd be able to clear off my screens reliably, and then double turn of charging from KO is very brutal. So that was my biggest concern, was that if you got the double turn, I needed to make sure I kept enough things alive that I could still come back. And so that pretty much dictated my whole turn, right? I had to be very non-committal. I had a very conservative deployment, and that really limited what I was able to do. Like, for example, because my Vexilor was out of 30 inches for unbinding, but he was within 30 inches, because he was out of unbinding range, he was also out of range to drop the meteor, which is effectively a 30-inch range. So that's an extra D3 mortal wound splash that could have gone. But I was able to translocate my other Vexilor up onto the north objective. That way I'd be able to control three. And if you decided to go take that objective, you would, be down in primary, because you'd only have two units left on the table, really, unless you decided to disembark. So my whole plan with this turn was kill the small boat, kill the navigator, so that the Voidstone orb is gone. Your tactical options would be more limited to just having two units walking around, which they have crazy high threat ranges, but it's easier to deal with two than it is with three. I just moved forward slightly. I found some room for my long strikes to drop into play to shoot the gun hauler off. I rolled some meteors. I cast the meteor. Unfortunately, all my mortal wounds, I don't like complaining about low rolls, but it's worth noting for tactical purposes that when, like, these things happen, right? Low rolls happen. And it affects what your decision-making is going to be. So I translocated the Vexilor to the top side there in cover. He rolled pretty low on his meteor. I think in total this turn, I did two wounds to your admiral, and I killed two Endrin Riggers in the top boat. It wasn't very much. And that's just a series of pretty poor D3 rolls. And that's the thing that can happen with this style, right? That's one of the consistency problems it might have.
Yes.
Yeah. Regarding the rest of the turn, I just moved up Vanguard Hunters. I dropped Tempesters in because I thought I just need as much stuff on the table to handle a double turn. Now, I hate doing this with Tempesters. This is like my least favorite thing to do, is to drop Tempesters onto the table and on one side of the table, because they're a fixed threat range of 22 inches. They can't run and shoot. So unless I get the translocate off, there's very fixed distance that they can actually do damage for the next turn. And since you're the faster army in this case, it's very easy for you to stay out of their range. So I was kind of banking on getting a translocate later. It was a bit of a risk here. But the rest of my deployment is very conservative. You can see I've got fulminators ready to riposte behind a liberator screen up front and personal. That way I can call for aid them back onto an objective. You can see that I've got vexillors on two sides of the map so that if you do kill the liberators, I can just pop them back into existence on another objective and reduce your primary score even further, hopefully. Knight and Cantor in the back blocking deep strikes and teleports. And then all along the lower part of the battle plan, I made sure that there was enough space for your frigates to land. Very passive turn, despite, you know, killing so many points of your army. I felt like if you got the double coming up, I wouldn't die, but depending on how those dice rolls go, it could have been a very different game. Mm-hmm. So that was my turn. I did score max turn after declaring magical dominance because you didn't have anything in range to unbind me. I killed a gun hauler, three riggers, the navigator, two riggers in the north boat, and then one rigger in the east boat. And that was it for my turn.
I just wanted to add what you said here. You essentially eliminated a big threat, like turn one, and not threat per se from the damage perspective, but a threat from me scoring the battle tactics, right? Because having a gun hauler with a navigator and Andrian riggers, allows me to score at least three battle tactics pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Plus, the navigator had once per battle auto unbind of the spell. And that was a pretty crippling churn. And from the point perspective, it was 20 to 25% of my army, which is,
Mm-hmm. It went well. I considered it like a tactical play, not necessarily like if I really wanted to cripple you, what I could have done here is drop my Tempestors in and try to shoot off the rest of the riggers. But I didn't feel comfortable with four Tempestors trying to shoot off a bunch of engine riggers. And if I low rolled that, that's not unlikely because they would be a 3-up save in the boat. They'd all out defense to be a 2-up save effectively. Minus one hit. If I ever low rolled that, you just rally back, and my Tempestors are gone basically for free, right? So I could have gone all in, but I thought it wasn't the right choice to make at this time.
No, hey. I agree. Had you deployed your Tempestors, I don't think you would even kill a, unit of nine. I would rally back, and then with my two boats next to your Tempestors, you would lose... Mm-hmm. What is it? 440 points of your army of not just a unit, but very valuable unit.
Yeah, the Tempestors are one of the most important units. You can't just throw them away. They have to trade consistently throughout the game. I can trade away most other things: the long strikes, the Dracolines, the Fulminators, even the general can go. But as long as the Tempestors are alive, I'm still in the game.
Yeah. So that was smart.
All right, so let's talk about your first round. Based on everything that we just discussed in my round, the possibility of you getting a double turn here was pretty big. It could have been very game-changing. How did you play into that while also it seemed like you took very measured steps to avoid, if I don't win the double, I don't lose the game as well, right? So run me through your thought process. What were you thinking?
Yeah, so that was time for me to start leaking my wounds. I start, regenerating the boats. I start bringing back the models. And then I was faced with a dilemma if I, should be more aggressive or should, score as much point as I can, but get closer to you. Given that I could potentially get into you with only one boat through fly high ability, the other one was too far behind, I decided to do it more conservatively, right? So you were ahead of 5 points, and I went for the 4-point churn. There is Battle Tactics from Caradhron Overlord book called Blast Them to Smithereens. For that and so for that battle tactic, I pick the objective, and at the end of the turn, there should be no enemy units within 12 inches of that objective, and then Lord Vexilor, Knight Vexilor was conveniently placed very close to my frigate, allowing me to reliably score this tactic. So I charge into him, I got to the objective, and then my other boat went into the objective on the right-hand side to secure control of that objective, and I decided, to stop there, not to advance further. You were pretty far away even for my 24-inch cannon shots. And yeah, so that turn was pretty uneventful. I scored 4 points.
It was a very conservative turn. I took special note at the bottom of the turn that you moved your frigate on the right side, so that you would be within threat range to shoot my long strikes if you won the next turn. So
Right.
that was good placement. That's everything trades, right? Long strikes shoot and then they get shot back, and that's the trick is how long you can go until they get shot back. Interesting thing that happened here. Was that because my Vexilor was so close, and in hindsight, I could have put him further away and baited you closer. That way, if I won the double, or if you failed to win the double, let's say, then I could be very, very aggressive. So that's something I can note for myself is that, I thought putting the Vexilor in cover would be a good idea, but I should have just known that there's no amount of cover that'll save me from that amount of guns and saws.
Yeah, maybe putting him in the center objective would be a better option, but you cannot always play perfectly, right?
Yeah, it looked cool. He was in cover, right?
Exactly.
I did also dispel my own comet here using the Vexilor. He moved up in a range of his own comet in order to dispel it and have it ready to cast on the next turn. So right now you're a point down and you're fishing for that double turn. You've got the threat ranges in order to take really big advantage of it and deal a very, very heavy blow to my army. But overall, I think because most of my important units are still alive, I felt pretty good about this even into a double turn. I did win the roll-off, and I had a big choice to make because I knew that my Tempestors weren't in range to shoot anything useful. So if I failed Dracoline, then this turn was really bad for me. I'd have very, very limited damage output here. I noticed that my long strikes were within 30 inches of your frigate, so I thought I could get some shots off before you come in to kill them, because if I didn't give you the if I didn't take the turn, my long strikes would be dead and I would get no use out of Thunderbolt Volley. And if I was going to take a double turn from you in the future, it would be better to do it after I shoot you a bunch of times and reduce the amount of stuff that you have on the table. That way when you do have a double turn, it's less impactful. So even though I wasn't in the best position to take advantage of this turn, I felt like it was important for me to try to take it and try to do as much damage as possible.
Yeah. And honestly speaking, from my perspective, I actually got relieved that you took the turn, because had I won the priority, I would still giving it to you, only because I still was pretty far away from you. My frigate on the right-hand side wouldn't be able to get to you reliably. You were still Your back of the board was protected from the teleport, and you've used once per game D3 mortal wounds from your Vaxilor, 3 out of 4 Vaxilors, right? So I
Two
was
out of the
pretty
three, yeah.
confident. 2 out of 3. Okay. Yeah, I knew that I would take some heat in the chin from the your long strikes, but that's fine. I knew you wouldn't be able to kill the entire unit, hopefully.
I got real
And I could,
close.
yes, and I could I would rally back, right? So that was my thought process too.
Well, let's see how my turn went for me. I ended up using Thunderbolt Volley to shoot at the Riggers. I thought it was just a matter of volume. I just needed to put as many shots in as possible. And then my translocation failed. In hindsight, I should have rolled the translocation first, right? Seeing what my options were, and then decided what to do. But, you know, them's the breaks. Thunderbolt Volley, I think I killed a couple Riggers. It wasn't many. I think like three, which is not the best use of a once per game ability. But it's a defensive army, right? Sometimes that happens. I was able to drop a meteor on you. I think I hit you with a lightning blast, but then I unfortunately failed to remember to use my last meteor banner on the Vexlor, which could have done another two mortal wounds, which would have been a very different game all of a sudden. Otherwise, my turn was pretty uneventful. I just moved some units around. I put Tempestors and Fulminators on the front line. I put Dracolines just within 2.5 inches of the front line. That way, if you charged into me, I would be able to at least riposte with the Dracolines. I moved my Liberators onto the central objective, knowing that you would struggle to score two or more even if I did this. Because even if you took one of the objectives from me, you know, at best you'd be scoring 5 points this turn, but then I'd be able to score more later. Sorry, long way of explaining that useless thing. In my haste to do all of this positioning, I accidentally left space on the bottom side there for you to teleport into play. And that's an embarrassing mistake because I was so careful with that spacing in round one and two, or sorry, in deployment and in round one. But it seems like I just totally forgot, trying to make sure all my long strikes and everything were in range. So that's unfortunate. The other play that I really like that I made here is I moved my Vexilor down there on the right side. Yeah, I like this play, even though it did open me up for teleports. But what I like about this play is that I moved him kind of off the objective so that if you wanted to kill him, you wouldn't be, through melee combat, you wouldn't be anywhere useful. And anytime your list in this position wasn't on an objective, it was really bad for you. So I kind of put you in a position where if you wanted to clear him out, you'd be overcommitting. And he was also in range to call for aid to put Liberators onto your home objective. So that was a sneaky little play. I was trying to get my Liberators to die so that I could teleport them effectively over to your objective. But the turn did not go as well as I thought it would, even though I did score surround and destroy by having the Vexilor, the Encanter, and the Vanguard Hunters teleport over. The long strikes really whiffed. They killed 8 out of the 9 Engine Riggers, and I knew that meant you were going to rally and come charging in. So overall, not the best turn, and in hindsight, I should have given the turn away. I had a very, very good position, and you were at full health, right? So it's like, yeah. So let's talk about your round two here. This photo here was taken during the combat phase. So run me through your thought process here, starting with your tactic and everything.
I thought this would be my turn to shine. I had to finally commit and go all in, because otherwise I will continue to bleed and I won't have any army by the turn three. So that's what I did. Like you said, you moved your the general, leaving some space behind your army, which allowed me to teleport and fly high with one of my frigates. Now, I thought killing your general would be pretty important for this game, specifically. So he's your obviously general, plus he scores you the grand strategy.
Mm-hmm. And he has Blizzard as well, and Blizzard is a big threat.
Exactly. Yes, that's correct, because your command trade, you knew all the spell lore from all the spells from the new GHB, including the Blizzard. Right, and the fact that I didn't have my navigator with auto unbind spell, just that was a no-brainer, right? I had to take him down, otherwise the one spell can wipe off my 9 balloon boys, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be a game. So you gave me this opportunity to essentially sneak behind, and take him out. Now, I had to charge into him and kill him with an impact hit.
Yes, I spiked some save rolls against your shooting. You were hoping to just kill him with some cannons, but he kept rolling those four ups after Finest Hour, so he was a healthy boy.
Exactly. Yes. He didn't want to go to Shaish easily. So, but I was able to take him down finally. Shaish was here in this case, doesn't matter. So, I took him down and I stayed outside three of your long strikes. Later to be able to pile in and attack them. Right, and in the meantime, I ran and charged with my other frigate, who had my general, and the balloon boys. So I immediately disembarked general after charging, and my balloon boys that would allow me to fight first. Now with all, so I had a choice to go into the Tempestors or the Fulminators. I thought that I didn't have a full squad of nine. I won't be able to clear up your Tempestors. Tempestors were a more juicy target. So I decided to go to the Fulminators. And I think I killed them to the wound.
Yes. Right? After they had us, I think they saved both the attacks from the Admiral. But then the saws just got in there and just made some fresh leather, for boots.
Exactly. and that's why the rend 2 is so good, because on 2 up save with all out defense, you were saving on 4s versus potentially savings of on 3. So I don't even think that the Sky Wardens would be able to lift the unit. Mm-hmm. But it's no here, no there. So I kill your Fulminators, which felt pretty good, but at the same time, I was now totally exposed. My balloon boys didn't get the cover and -1 to hit. My general, admiral, was there in front of you. And then it was my activation again. Right, because the admiral would fight first, then the balloon boys, and now my first activation. So I piled in with my other boat to your long strikes, and I was able to take them down, the mm-hmm. entire unit. So
that was not a challenge. They just fell over.
That was not a challenge. But I removed a pretty big threat from the game. But like I said, now I was exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really batting for the double churn here, right? Could potentially bring me back to the game.
Right. Well, this isn't the end of the story for your turn here. I think this is, even though I made this huge mistake, I made a very good play with positioning my Dracolines in particular. I've got a couple more photos here. So after your balloon guys came in and attacked, you had only rallied back 3 of them, by the way. So I was pretty lucky with that you only got 3 on your rally rather than, getting the full 10. Between my Tempestors and I believe one of my Dracolines being able to attack them, I was able to wipe the full squad of balloons. I got a few attacks in on the Admiral. But then I was able to, even though the Admiral was the nearest model for that bottom Dracoline, I was able to just rotate the base such that the whole unit was now, or at least one model in the unit, was within 3 inches of where you ended up piling in your frigate. So I was able to put the full lightning arc into your unit of engine riggers and also lock them in combat so that they weren't able to rally back on the next turn. And I think that was kind of like a game-swinging maneuver, being able to recognize that. So here's a close-up shot of where it ended up. You can see Fulminators are gone. Liberators are almost dead. Your Admiral is fighting for his life there. And then I've got that one Dracoline within 3 inches of your frigate.
Yeah, brave dwarf. And it's worth mentioning that the base is the actual frigate.
Yes, yeah, we took it off because it was getting a little... It's a brilliant conversion, and I love looking at it, but it's a little spindly, and we didn't want it to get damaged, so we just left the empty base.
Exactly.
So your turn was great. You took advantage of a huge mistake on my part. I think you committed very well here. you know, the shooting could have gone a little bit better on the general, and then you could have put the mortal wounds into the long strikes, and then you could have attacked the Dracolines. Like, it could have gone a little bit better in that way. But you did manage to wipe out the Blizzard. You managed to wipe out my general to get rid of my grand strategy. You got rid of Fulminators, which were a very good counter-charging unit. It was a good turn. You also managed to score three objective, or score max 5 points with Intimidate as your tactic. You had three objectives under your control. So it was a full 5 point turn and a lot of kills, you can see there. Unfortunately, you lost a lot of rigors on the way. I don't remember how many I blasted off you with the lightning arc, but I know that I killed the squad of four that charged in. All right, so a double turn here would have been pretty good for you, you know, being able to fight first with your admiral. But unfortunately, I did win the priority role, and I opted to take the turn. So I went for Intimidate the Invaders. I was able to, just retreat some units off. I was able to shoot down the frigate. My Dracolines were able to get some more fighting done. And I think I killed all but one Endrin Rigger, the Endrin Master, and the frigate itself. That was a pretty big swing there. But I'm curious to think, what would you have done if you had won the turn order? You know, given the last photo we just looked at where you had the Admiral with a couple wounds left in combat, and then you were locked in with these rigors. How different do you think this would have gone if you had won this priority role?
Like, for sure, it wouldn't be a game-winning prio for me. It would keep me in the game and allow me to score more points and start, you know, maybe tying some of your units. Because with a frigate, I've got this disengage command ability where I can, you know, retrieve my boat and shoot with everything I have, including the boat, into that. So that would allow me to, you know, take back the top objective, and then maybe start crippling some of your, you know, heroes from the in the center. And the bottom left frigate would have the first swing at your
Dracolines, right?
Dracolines. And plus the the admiral, he's pretty fighty in combat, so he has like 3 damage. It's 3 attacks, 3s, 2s, minus 2, 3 damage flat. So maybe crippling your Dracolines from both sides, potentially, you know, taking the entire unit, if I'm lucky with the rolls, leaving you only with the Tempestors and, you know, a handful of heroes would be pretty, you know, pretty good. That was my game plan, right?
So, right. I think in that position, you would have still been struggling to score primaries. And what tactic would you have done out of that situation, out of curiosity?
I haven't thought about that, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, it's just a thought exercise, so don't worry about it. It was like a week ago, so it's fine. Don't worry about it.
But even now, looking, I don't think I have any tactic that I could reliably score, to be honest with you, from off the top of my head.
Yeah, really limited in options here. That's one thing that going into the game, I knew that the KO tactics were very good. Like, people score them all the time, right? But they're very particular about what they want you to do, right? So one of them is, this came up later, opening salvo, it can only be done if no units have been destroyed yet, right? So you have to be the first person to shoot a unit off the table. And by letting me go first, that became unavailable to you. One of your tactics, I think, is, you know, disembark 3 units, which you didn't have 3 units in any of your boats. So you'd be disembarking 2 boats, and your guys are a lot more vulnerable outside. So you don't want to do that. Another one was embark 3 units, which if they don't disembark, then they can't embark either. So it seemed like it seemed like I could create scenarios where you would be starved of battle tactics, especially because Caradhron isn't scoring the seasonal ones, as, you know, they're not doing things like they're a low unit count army, so they don't have a lot of units for bait and trap, let into the maelstrom, especially once you're already committed like this, right? You don't have a lot of retreat and charge options. So, So going on about my turn, I killed what I was in melee with. I tried to kill everything that I could, tried to score. I tried to just control every single objective because I kept going at the top of the round. I knew that your double turn was coming at some point. I knew that you'd be able to retreat, rally. And, the game's not over, despite how that previous turn went. The game was certainly not over. And I needed to make sure that I controlled all of the objectives and stayed ahead on primary in order to win this game. And looking at your turn from that position, you opted to... It says you're bait and trap, but I think it was just a throwaway tactic, right?
It was a... yes, it was a throwaway tactic, yeah. Because there was no tactic that I could have achieved. Once again, that that brings to the initial point when I mentioned that killing a gun hauler with two units there prevented me from potentially scoring a few battle tactics, like including let into the maelstrom, bait and traps around and destroy. Right, I had much more choices, but in this particular scenario. Yeah, there were not much that I could do. So I start losing the points and it started to snowball.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This was a 1-point turn. Not ideal, but I like that you were looking for outs here. You were thinking, what can I do? If I win the next turn order, I can start rallying. I can start contesting things. Even if you're in a situation where the score differential is as high as it was here, you can still try to score as much as possible for the sake of tiebreakers in a tournament and things like that. And that's the right thing to do, right? Is to think of how can I still maximize my score even when I'm in a losing position.
Right.
So you did manage to kill a Dracoline here. I think you revived a few riggers. I think it was just a cannon shot or something. Something killed the Dracoline, that's the point. And the Vexilor took 4 wounds here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I won the next priority roll, and even though you did rally back 3 guys, I declared reprisal as my tactic, which I thought was pretty funny because it was the boat that killed my general with the charge mortal wounds.
Yeah.
So I was taking revenge on a piece of steel, but hey, it's a narrative game after all. So I was able to just, teleport Vanguard Hunters, fully surround you, charge everything in, and finished off your boat. And it got pretty close, actually, because, 2-up save, and I just had a lot of Rend 1 attacks from Dracolines. There was a point where I was like, maybe I won't actually score this. But I was able to kill the frigate, and then because everything in the frigate has to disembark, and there was no space for it to disembark, everything just died immediately. And that was the game. We called it there.
Yeah. That is a disadvantage of the KO. Obviously, that's a huge weakness. If you surround the boats and you destroy it, your half of the army potentially dies, right? That's why. To your previous point, why I prefer Andron Riggers, they just deal more reliable damage with the two rends. So I want to make sure whoever I'm charging in, I live that unit. Otherwise, if I get surrounded, the boat dies, that's potentially a game over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really bad when that happens.
And it happened.
It's going to happen. There's, you don't often get surrounded by Stormcast, but it can happen.
Yeah, fair.
For my 5th turn, just to max score, I ended up scoring the new Stormcast battle tactic, secure the battlefield. I was able to just teleport a unit of Vanguard Hunters into one corner, walk the rest of the units as needed, and there you go. So the final score ended up being 25 for Stormcast and 10 for Caradron. And even though that score difference is huge, that really doesn't display how close this game was, right? Just any small decision, one way or the other, it could have been a totally different game. So I had a great time. I thought this was a really fun tactical game, and I'm really glad we got to play it, man. I was hoping to play you in this league because you've always been a great opponent.
Yeah, likewise. And like you said, this was a pretty tactical game. Lots of preparation from both sides. Going back into the game, if you ask how would I have played differently. Honestly, it's hard to say.
I think the target priority was a bit off from your side. Because I think the Tempestors and the Dracolines are the biggest threat. Like, the long strikes are going to take chunks out of your army every turn. But they're a tactical piece, right? The point of them doing damage is to keep you at a certain distance. Killing them is great. It gets rid of damage, but the Tempestors and Dracolines do more damage. And since your army can't really handle taking that much damage, I was able to, with just a handful of units, just kind of walk over you at the end there. Mm-hmm. And I think I asked you this the day we played the game, is why you went into the Fulminators instead of the Tempestors. And you answered it. Just, that's a great answer. Like, you just didn't have the volume of wounds needed to kill the Tempestors because you had only four Riggers. Now, if you had gone into that turn with all nine, would you have gone into the Tempestors in that case?
Oh, yeah, 100%. If I had all nine, then yes, hands down. I think I only had four, right, when I charged.
Yeah, you only had four.
So I had a better shot lifting the Fulminators. Another thing that I could have, potentially change is I would deploy probably this time my Gunholder further and trying to keep him alive.
Trying to bait my long strikes in as well. I think that would work.
Yeah. And then, you know, my both frigates would be a main threat. They will move forward, and the Gunholder will go to the, bottom of the table from when you're looking at the screen, and just try to put some pressure on your soul heroes, right? And, you know, capturing the objectives and scoring the battle tactics. So that probably would be another way to play this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not giving up the Gunholder for free round one. Yeah, I'd love to re-rack this sometime if you're interested. And you got a spare afternoon, we can play this through again and see if the results will be different.
Yes. Look, yeah, that would be nice.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Yuri, for coming on the show. Really appreciate your insights here. Caradhron is, you know, one of the strongest armies in the game right now, so it's good to see a competitive player discussing their thoughts on it, their thought process, and that sort of thing. So thanks again for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, and I'll probably see you tomorrow at the Work Game Store.
Yeah, I'm there most Tuesdays, so you'll probably see me there. I'll have a fun new Ionis list if we're allowed to talk about that. I think we are. They revealed the War Scroll, so it's fine.
Yeah, it was released today. So
sweet. Okay, thanks a lot, man. And that'll wrap up this episode. Thank you, everybody, for watching, especially our Patreon and YouTube subscribers. I hope these battle reports are an interesting video format. We've been getting a lot of good feedback about them, but let me know what you think, what we could be doing better, what we could be doing differently. The way I view these from our side, you know, the guys making the podcast, we view them as a way to expand on concepts that we talk about otherwise on the show. We look at in-game practical examples of things that happen in the game and how the things we talk about in the show translate into real games. So if you like this kind of format, if you like this discussion, analytical style battle report, let us know down below in the comments. Or if you think we missed anything or we made a mistake in some way, you know, we're not perfect. Hopefully we didn't make any mistakes here that are too egregious. But if you think you caught something, then please leave us a comment down below or come onto our Discord server and yell at us in person. If you want to talk about AOS, we talk about AOS all the time on the Stormkeep Discord server. You can find a link in the description down below. We have a battle report forum where you can catch detailed battle reports like the one you just watched. I have another game on there from the same store league using the same list against a Khorne player playing a Scarbrand Unfettered Fury Skull Reaper list. Very, very tough opponent. We have a forum for posting models, work in progress, finished products. We have a lot of amazing painters on the server. We do community contests to help show off our amazing painters and just bring the community together. If you're watching this as time of release, then right now we have a painting warbands contest going on right now. So if you have a Stormcast warband from Underworlds or Warcry, like the new Quest or Soulsworn, if you have them painted up, then you can submit them there for a chance to win fabulous prizes. You can consider supporting the gang by becoming a member on YouTube or joining us on patreon.com/thestormkeep. For $5 a month, you get access to the slides we use in all these videos, as well as early access to all the videos. Coming up next on the podcast, we have our updated Stormcast Allies video, breaking down all the different allies that Stormcast can bring to the game. There's a lot. It's almost a Stormcast battle tome worth of units, so we go pretty in-depth in discussion about all of the different units that Stormcast can bring. We have a how to play Karazai guide coming. And now that some things have been officially announced, we can say that we are working on reviews for the new War Scroll for Ionis, his new army, the Draconith Skywing. We're looking at Neve Black Talon, and we are looking at how to put all these things together in Stormcast armies. So stay tuned. We'll see you in the next one.